This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. Pope Benedict has stunned the Catholic world with word that he is resigning. He's citing infirmity and his age. Pope Benedict is 85 years old. Joining us to talk about his papacy are Michelle Dillon and Walter Robinson. Michelle Dillon is a professor of sociology and department chair at the University of New Hampshire, and Walter Robinson, distinguished professor of journalism at Northeastern University. He oversaw the Globe Spotlight team that broke the sex abuse scandals in the Catholic Archdiocese of Boston. Thank you both for joining us. And we're opening up the lines at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. What's next for the Catholic Church if you're Catholic and are surprised, as the rest of us are, about Pope Benedict stepping down? Who would you like to see as the next pope? And what does this mean in terms of a change of direction for the Catholic Church, perhaps? You may know that Pope Benedict XVI is quite conservative. You want to keep it that way, keep the direction of the church that way. Would like to see someone, a new pope with a different direction. We're at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. And you can tweet us at Boss Public Radio or write to our Facebook page. So now, Michelle Dillon, any hint? Did you have a, you know, you study this. Did you have a clue that this might happen?
Certainly not, Kelly. And I don't think anyone, even though sitting right in the Vatican, expected this. I mean, obviously, he's 85, so he's not going to be there forever. But I think what was really surprising was that he chose himself to step down rather than die, basically, in office. So that, I think, was the surprise. Of course, after seeing Pope John Paul II, who was very frail, who was publicly frail for many years, I think most Catholics would have expected that Pope Benedict, even if he did become ill, would still stay as Pope. But I think it's actually to his credit that he chose to step down.
Well, that was a surprising decision because everybody does die in that office. It is a lifetime appointment. And the last time a pope did that was 600 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I have to believe then that he's really feeling pretty infirm and pretty ill.
Well, I think to be pope, it's a demanding job, obviously. And I think he recognizes that he really doesn't have the 100% physical and mental energy to devote to it. So I think he's really saying that the church right now is confronting many crises and challenges, as many people are aware of, and it really needs full-time leadership. So he could have obviously stayed as Pope and have delegated some of his duties and decision-making to others around him. But I think the fact that he said we need a definite new leader here, not somebody who's half in charge, I think that's a sign of his concern about the future direction of the church and its well-being.
So what this means, of course, is that he's alive as they pick the next Pope,
yes,
which is a little bit different situation as well. So is it like the corporate world or other places where if he says, hey, this is my guy, this cardinal, that's it? Or what?
No, I think, and I think he made that clear in his text. You know, he's retiring with, you know, it was a conscientious, you know, decision on his part. And he says he wants to devote himself the rest of his life to prayer and quiet, you know, reflection. So I think he really is saying, I'm out of here. I'm not going to have a public role. And I think he's just, if he wanted to still keep some eye on the reins of the church, he could have stayed as Pope. But I think he's making a definite decision that he's willing to pass it on to whoever will be the next pope, and that he's not going to be in the wings, you know, whispering into his ear, or whispering into the ears of his of the new pope's advisors.
So, but let me put it this way then. So even if he said, I'm not going to pick a person, if it is known who he sort of has been in line with theologically or in the same path conservatively as we've said he is, would that influence the group of cardinals who vote?
Well, I think to some extent, but really quite minimally. You know, I really do think, yes, he has been conservative and John Paul, his predecessor, was very conservative. But that doesn't mean that the next pope can't be much more liberal. And even though, of course, the vast majority of these cardinals have been actually appointed by Pope Benedict and thus clearly in line with his own thinking, at the same time, they're all individual men, right? They all have their own opinions. Mm-hmm. And while they can serve very faithfully one particular pope, it doesn't mean that they totally agree in their own hearts and in their conscience with everything. So I don't see it in terms, it may well be a very conservative new pope, but I don't necessarily think that the cardinals are going in saying, oh, we must elect someone like Benedict, because I think that would be just not the right kind of thinking to have.
If you have not heard, Pope Benedict XVI announced this morning that he is resigning. This is the first time a pope has stepped down in 600 years. Pope Benedict is 85 years old, and I am talking about his legacy with Michelle Dillon, who is a professor of sociology and department chair at the University of New Hampshire. And in just a bit, I'm going to turn over to Walter Robinson to continue this conversation. But Michelle, I got a few more questions for you. So there are names that have been floated already. They seem, some of them, to be fairly typical. Mm-hmm. What do you think? The guy in New York, whose name I'm blanking on,
Cardinal Dolan.
Yes. Seems not to be as a sure bet as others might have suggested.
Well, you know, this is all total speculation.
Right.
And, of course, I know journalists and betting organizations want to bet on these. But, you know, really nobody knows. And while we can have a short list, and certainly there is pressure to have somebody who's not from the West or somebody who's not European, and to have somebody perhaps from Africa or from one of the Latin American countries, because that's where the growth is right now happening in the Catholic population. I really, you know, despite those sort of political pressures, really anyone can become Pope. And yet, of course, at the same time, it is very much a Western, very Western European institution. So,
well, I did want to talk to you about that, because all of the names that have thus far been on the speculation list are all from the West and European. Mm-hmm. And I thought, to your point, it was somewhat odd, given that the growth, as you've just said, in the church is really in, certainly in this country, is in immigrant communities, mm-hmm. and then in the rest of the world, Latin America and Africa. So, but none of those names appear, not even one.
Right, because the power structure of the Catholic Church is still very much, you know, in the West, and very much European. And so, you know, there's several European cardinals, particularly Italian cardinals, who would think of themselves as next in line. I think the very fact that even Cardinal Dolan is mentioned is itself refreshing, or Cardinal Lullay from Canada, because it shows that at least we're thinking, not just in the US, but their names have been mentioned in European media as possible successors. At least it's broadening the mind. But ultimately, you know, the Vatican is the headquarters of the Catholic Church, and that's where the doctrine is reformulated and articulated. That's where the power structure, the bureaucratic power structure, the decision making takes place. So, you know, yes, it sounds nice in principle. Let's have a bishop from Africa. But it, really, I think the church is a much more conservative institution than maybe we might sometimes forget that it is.
Okay, that's my guest, Michelle Dillon. She's a professor of sociology and department chair at the University of New Hampshire. We're talking about Pope Benedict XVI announcing this morning that he is resigning at 65 years old, citing health issues. Walter Robinson, I want to turn to you. You're a distinguished professor of journalism at Northeastern University, and you were overseeing the Globe Spotlight team that broke the sex abuse scandals in the Catholic Archdiocese of Boston. Put Pope Benedict XVI's length of time, term in office, I guess, in the context of the sex scandals. Was he a person that was able to sort of clean up a little bit what had been so intense before? Or is he thought of as someone that also kind of looked the other way?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. And, you know, he was the head under his predecessor of the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith. And in that role, he was the one who had the task of dealing with what he eventually called the filth in the church, but not until 2005. The Vatican's posture with regards to sexual abuse around the world had long been, you handle it, to local cardinals and bishops. But the Vatican was well aware of it, and in fact, as we know, then Archbishop Ratzinger, when he was very briefly, I think for just 3 years, the Archbishop in Munich, had, even in that brief period, his own problems with covering up incidents involving priests accused of sexual abuse. So when this became an issue of great public awareness a decade or so ago, It was clear from the documents that came forward that the Vatican did in fact deal when it had to with cases of abusive priests, but even American cardinals such as Cardinal Lauren Boston when they decided to move against a priest and seek to have a priest laicized, they themselves were very, very frustrated at the lengthy canon law process that the Vatican used before coming to decisions. And I think as the abuse scandal became more widespread, particularly in Europe and even in parts of Latin America, the Vatican was forced to deal more directly with it. I think, and I just to follow up on what Michelle had to say, I thought that for the last two papacies, we had two men who were quite aged, and I think were not well equipped to deal in the modern world with the kind of public attention that was brought on this issue. And I was thinking this morning after the resignation that, you know, we had an elderly president in the United States who had many accomplishments, President Reagan, and he left office at age 78. And I think many people have since concluded that we really shouldn't have somebody in a job of that importance at that age. And Pope Benedict actually assumed the papacy at the age of 78. So we have, my sense is, frankly, is that the Europeans have kind of messed things up. I was looking at some figures this morning. Brazil, for instance, has 150 million Catholics. That's about 12% of the Catholic population of the globe. And a very prominent young cardinal, I say he's only 65, in the Vatican, whose name has already cropped up on some list, but I should be the last person to get into speculating.
You must have the expanded list. My short list doesn't have him on it.
Yeah. clearly the legacy of Pope Benedict is, it's a mixed bag, but it's shrouded by the church's handling of the sexual abuse scandal, which I think has cost the church an enormous amount of credibility, particularly within the developed world. And going forward, what this means, I don't know.
We're talking about Pope Benedict stepping down, saying that he will leave because he's ill and not able to perform the functions of the Pope. We want to know what you think about that. We're opening up the lines at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. I'm here with Walter Robinson, Distinguished Professor of Journalism at Northeastern University. He oversaw the Globe Spotlight team's reporting of the sex abuse scandals in the Catholic Archdiocese of Boston. And also here with Michelle Dillon, who's a professor of sociology and department chair at the University of New Hampshire. Michelle, you wanted to add?
Well, just Walter, when you mentioned the age point, you know, I would quibble a little bit. I don't think it's age alone that ultimately matters. What I would say, the whole cover-up of the sex abuse issue was really abetted by the whole church approach in terms of its understanding of transparency, regardless of how young or old the particular pope or the various cardinals and bishops are or were. When we talk about age, because people are asking or speculating, you know, should the next pope be young, under 60, as they're saying? I look to John the 23rd. When he became pope, he was 77 and he had a very short tenure, less than 5 years, but he was the one who convened the Second Vatican Council, which in my assessment has been the most transformative and revitalizing event in modern Catholic Church history. So I wouldn't want to say that it's age alone. I think the whole bureaucracy within the Catholic Church and the culture which resists transparency over sex abuse and many other issues is really more the culprit.
Right. I agree with you that. And my point on age is that the demands
yes.
really when transparency is in effect to a degree forced upon an institution, I think being nimble and younger helps, and I don't disagree with what you said. I just think that going forward, I think Pope Benedict's decision has to be motivated in part by what he saw as he stood at the elbow of Pope John Paul II, and how how his faculties diminished over time.
Right, and I think that's to his credit, because he said, I don't have the strength to be, to carry on the correct, you know, the duties as I would want to do them. Because I think he, you know, what surprised some, that he became quite a good traveler himself. You know, he wasn't charismatic and pastoral in the way that we saw John Paul II to be, and yet I think he made a strong effort to visit so many countries in the world and to be energetic about that. And clearly he's unable to do that part as well as other parts of his position.
Now, a lot of people saw him as returning to sort of what is thought of as the solid foundation of church doctrine. In other words, you know, maybe some of the other popes were viewed as, while they may be transformative, moving a little bit away from the foundation, you know, like, this is what we do, this is what the church believes in, and this is what I'm going to articulate all around the world, and that he's Pope Benedict the 16th really saw that as his role. Would you agree with that, Michelle?
Well, he saw it as his role, but what I would point out, as many others would certainly say, is, you know, the question of what is core to Catholicism is in some sense an open question. You know, there's core and key theological points in terms of, you know, belief about Jesus and all of those sacraments and the resurrection and all of that, but the larger sort of more everyday questions about morality and social justice teachings and the larger social teaching of the church, these are quite open-ended. And, you know, other popes, you know, the whole social tradition of the church preceded even John the 23rd. It goes back to the late 19th century and further. So, I mean, how popes interpret what is the Catholic tradition is an ongoing endeavor. And Catholic theologians, almost all, emphasize that Catholicism is a living tradition. It's not about being locked up and put away in some vault. And it's not about just faith alone, but it's faith and reason. So using reason to interpret what it means to be Catholic, given the constraints and the challenges of the modern world. And so that sort of behooves Catholics, individual leaders, as well as, you know, ordinary practitioners, to decide, you know, what does it mean to be Catholic? And of course, they look to the bishops and certainly to the Pope to be in the forefront of articulating what that means. So this notion of what's core is itself a complicated issue.
Anne from Worcester, go ahead, please. You're on Boston Public Radio, 89.7.
Hi, good afternoon. My son is a Catholic theologian and has chosen not to look to the priesthood for his life because of the way the church has been operating in the past decade. And I'm hoping that the resignation of Pope Benedict, and I will certainly pray for him, I'm hoping that it will, that we all recognize the immensity of this decision. And I love what your guest just said about the social justice issues in our church. And I'm hoping that they really look at the future of our church and that what we're really about, and that we can move in a direction away from the division and the hardcore feelings that many Catholics get from the current papacy. I'm praying that this is actually divine intervention and is going to be a decision made in the hearts of these men to move us forward in 2013, as opposed to, you know, being stifled in who we've been and our history. I think we have something great to offer, and I think we can be better than we are. And I'm hoping the next pope will be that leader.
So, Anne, are you an active Catholic?
Yes, I am a very active Catholic, and I have to say, one of the reasons I stay in the Catholic Church, given all of our difficulties that I see as difficulties, is my son, who is he's actually my leader. You know, it's true when I believe in Jesus said, you know, look to the children, because he's the one saying, no, Mom, this is actually a tradition of 2,000 years that's worth fighting for. And to go back to our core, it's a very good core, but we've lost track. He was beyond excited this morning to hear the Pope was resigning, wished him well, but is, you know, to see a 22, 23-year-old kid so excited about the potential future of the church is—it's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing, and he has a lot of friends that feel this way. I mean, this is a generation that's actually thinking about their church, so I hope that grows.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your thoughtful call, Anne from Worcester.
Thank you.
Well, what do you think about that call, Walter?
Well, I take the point of Anne's call that perhaps whatever the College of Cardinals does, that the next pope would be more in a position to be a healing force then it was possible for Cardinal Ratzinger, Pope Benedict, to be given his involvement in the sexual abuse scandal. And then perhaps a new pope could reach out in a way that is more effective and credible with Catholics, particularly Catholics in developing countries who I think for whom the church has lost so much credibility.
Well, let's talk about those numbers, because you mentioned the 150 million Catholics in Brazil. There's a billion Catholics in the world. But there is no question, Walter Robinson, that the sex abuse scandal sent a lot of people away from the church. I've done a number of conversations here and, you know, had some angry Catholics calling in, feeling betrayed by their faith, betrayed by the church, and have said they just are unable, unlike Anne, to find their way back to the church. So is this a way to maybe rebuild those numbers, or can you speak to the disappointment and the anger of those folk that moved away? Because you heard from them when you were covering the sex abuse case.
Right. I mean, first you have to look at the numbers with some skepticism, and particularly in the developed world. And one number is about a quarter of the world's Catholics are counted as Europeans. And as I think almost anybody knows, the percentage of Europeans who actually attend Mass is some fraction of that. So the growth of the church and the extent to which Catholics are fervent in their devotion, I think, has tipped pretty substantially toward the developed world. And now, does that necessarily argue that the next pope would come from there? I don't think so. But then if you look at the complexion of the sexual abuse scandal differed in that world. You know, the most vociferous and angry reactions to it go back 15 years or more to Australia and New Zealand. And then you look at the reaction in the Americas and in Ireland. And in the last several years, we've seen, for instance, in Poland and Spain and France, somewhat in Germany, that the scandal has grown. Somewhat less so in Latin America, but actually more there than one would have anticipated a decade ago. In Chile, in Mexico, for instance, there has been quite a bit of scandal. Less so in Africa, although the church has had its problems there with the priests pretty openly involved in heterosexual relationships.
I would just wonder about one thing that you've said, though, because I'm going to ask Michelle this as well. I don't know that we can assess, I think that you can separate people who are fervent in their devotion but have left the church. That's two different groups of people. In other words, there are people who are very much Catholic, feel very committed to their faith, but do not feel that the church represents the faith that they are very much devoted to. So in that way, you can have a couple sets of numbers of where folks
are.
Well,
just to bring it home to the Boston Archdiocese, it has long been referred to as the the most Catholic of the major archdioceses. And this was the church's figures were that about half of the population in the archdiocese, so about 2 million people, are Catholics. But many of those are nominal. Back in 2004, when the church did a census of how many people regularly went to Mass, it was about 15 to 17% of that number. Mm-hmm. So the point is that I think that for people who are called Catholics, I think it's more of a nominal designation in the developed countries, and certainly in North America and in Europe.
Let me get Michelle to weigh in on that.
Well, there's a lot to say. I'll just say a couple of things. You know, certainly a lot, nobody can minimize the impact of the sex abuse scandal on the victims themselves and their families and on the Catholic population as a whole. But at the same time, I think we see from all our various studies that many Catholics are moving on. Many Catholics, some will never come back to the church, and that's fine, and that's their prerogative. Many have come back, and certainly you see it even in the Archdiocese of Boston in terms of Catholic giving. You know, it reached a low point after the Boston Globe, after 2002 when the Globe exposed the scandal. But for the last few years, it has been increasing, you know, in significant amounts. So I think that to me is a clear indicator that people move on. And certainly in our studies, we find that people, you know, are upset about it still, but nonetheless they see that the Catholic tradition has other things to offer too. And additionally, yes, many Catholics are what Walter calls nominal Catholics, but they still, what I find interesting is that even if they don't go to church every Sunday or even once a month, although many tend to go once a month, they still want to be Catholic and they still want to call themselves Catholic because they take seriously various aspects, various elements of the tradition. And that's, I think, maybe even Anne from Worcester, that's partly, you know, she's hanging in there even though she's obviously would seem to be appalled by certain things. But she still, as her son says, feels that there are other good things in the tradition that can be retrieved. And certainly when you ask people who have left the church, why did they leave? You get a whole host of reasons. And of course, yes, some the sex abuse, some also, you know, the church's position on women and on same-sex issues and those sort of more contemporary issues. But I think the fact that people, I don't like to just say that they're nominal Catholics, because what exactly is a practicing Catholic? What, you know, if you're to really practice all the things that the Catholic Church teaches, I don't know that have too many, even at the College of Cardinals.
Erica from Walter, let me get Erica in, and then I'll take a listen from you. Erica from Billerica, go ahead, please. You're on Boston Public Radio, 89.7.
Hi, Callie. As a cynical person by nature and not a Catholic, I look at the Pope as looking relatively spry compared to some of his predecessors for his age. And as was pointed out, he could stay in office and delegate more if he wanted to. And I just wonder if this is not a case of more information coming out that leads more directly to his involvement in covering up the pedophile scandal. On NPR last week, and I don't remember what station or report it was, there was a reporter on quoting from letters signed by the current Pope when he was in charge of the Office for the Faith, allowing a bishop who was about to be defrocked to just kind of go away quietly and not have to face the embarrassment, and Cardinal Ratzinger agreed to let that happen. And, you know, if you're a senator or if you're the CEO of a big financial company, you get to sit, and you're in trouble, you get to say you want to spend more time with your wife and grandkids. If you're in the Pope's position, you don't have that out.
But you do have the out that you can stay as Pope. Nobody's going to push you out. So that's what actually makes it even more interesting, is that he, because I'm sure there, you know, there's always going to be that somebody could have done more and all of that. But no matter what he has done, it's still his choice to, you know, to truly decide that I'm going to step down. Because even if there was to be huge polls reported, you know, in the next few days that people wanted the Pope to step down because of some issue or other, it's still his call. So I think that we have to keep that in mind.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Erica. And
okay.
We have much more to talk about this. We are talking about Pope Benedict XVI and his decision to step down. We're joined by Michelle Dillon, a professor of sociology at the University. This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about Pope Benedict and his decision to step down. I'm joined by Michelle Dillon and Walter Robinson. Michelle Dillon is a professor of sociology and department chair at the University of New Hampshire. Walter Robinson is a professor of journalism at Northeastern University. He oversaw the Globe Spotlight team that broke the sex abuse scandals in the Catholic Archdiocese of Boston. You can join our conversation at 877-301-8970. 877-301-8970. Send us a tweet at Boss Public Radio. Walter Robinson, you were wanting to make a point before we left for a short break. Go right ahead.
This has to do with the way Catholics view their church. There's no doubt that the number of Catholics attending Mass, certainly in the Archdiocese, has gone up, that donations are up. But in the context of our discussion about the papacy and the College of Cardinals who will elect the new pope, the difference I see is that there hasn't been a change in the last 10 years, is that even people who have come back to the Church tend to hold the hierarchy at something beyond arm's length. I mean, their faith has been restored or renewed, but their skepticism of the bishops and the cardinals and ultimately of the pope has not diminished.
Right. Mm. Well, that's true since at least the late 70s. We have plenty of good sociological data documenting that. And really the issue that caused the rupture in the American context between lay Catholics and the hierarchy and Rome was the birth control issue. We don't think of Paul VI as being a very open-minded pope as such, but he actually had set up a papal commission to inquire into whether, the whole issue of birth control. And many people, particularly in the wake of Vatican II, expected that he would come down on the side of saying, yes, it is moral for Catholics to use artificial contraception. He, of course, didn't, and issued his encyclical, banning artificial contraception. And it was really, that was the rupture. Catholics, particularly American Catholics, said, we have to make moral choices in terms of our own everyday lives, in terms of our family planning issues. And that really, we show it very clearly in lots of good empirical data, was the rupture. And since then, American Catholics' respect for the bishops on a whole host of issues has been diminished.
And I wonder if it's his own mini scandal with the butler writing about, some of the behind the scenes goings on there had any impact on his legacy, Michelle, would you say, Pope Benedict?
Well, I mean, there's always intrigue and we all like to read about this. But I think ultimately, there has to always be a lot of noise if you're the leader of any large organization, never mind then of the Catholic Church. But I would think that he really, because he's a man, I think, whatever people feel about him, I think you'd have to say he's a man of great integrity. And that's clearly been reflected in his own sort of proclamations and affirmations of various aspects of both theology and of Catholic teaching in general. So I think he would seem, and I've never obviously met him, but I think from a distance he seems like a man of great integrity and a very fine person. And I read this on the basis of his own statement of resignation, that he really is doing this for the good of the Church, regardless and independent of all these other scandals. And certainly there's been intrigue and other scandals.
Ellen from Plaistow, New Hampshire. Go ahead, please. You're on Boston Public Radio.
Yes, I was just calling, and I had been saying to the man who screened the call how, in the Catholic faith, they look at the Pope as being infallible, and he brought up, yes, in matters of faith. But also, people are afraid to question the Pope in other matters, too, but he is only a man, and he does make mistakes. But I'm going to go back to the sexual abuse that has happened over the years. I was raised in Dorchester and as a Catholic, and I went to parochial school for a bit of my life. And I'm going to tell you, I could tell when a priest was weird, and I was a kid. My parents could tell when a priest was weird. And I'm telling you that there is no excuse for what these priests did. They should be serving time in jail for it. But when is anybody ever going to talk about the fact that when your parent feels that somebody is odd or off and they still sent you to spend time with that person? I mean, when are the Catholics going to stand up and say that sometimes your parents, knowing that they weren't feeling right about something, still let that, oh, well, this is a priest, come before their own gut feeling?
I think that's a tough one, Ellen, because now you're questioning someone who represents, the highest and best part of your faith. And so I really do have sympathy with those parents who were at war with themselves, actually having those feelings, but at the same time thinking that can't be possible because of this. And I think a lot of people didn't even know that it had happened until others were brave enough to come out and speak to Walter Robinson and his team.
Oh,
and,
I agree. I agree with that, but we all have to remember something. When the Catholic faith was first brought about, when Jesus Christ said to Peter, upon this rock I build my church, And that was because he was being told to go out and build the Church of Jesus Christ. And we all have to remember, Catholic is a Christian faith. Catholic means open to all. And we are, our belief is in the what Jesus Christ did on this earth, his teachings, and this is what we are, this is what we have evolved from. We have to remember, there was no you can't get married, you're a priest. We said those things came about when past popes, like Pope Boniface, who was as evil as can be, when the popes were stealing from the Church and having mistresses and children of all different kinds of women and were grasping for power, priests were only told they couldn't get married by a man-made law. Mm. And having done that, they absolutely created an environment for pedophile men to go and hide and have victims. And, you know, the priest not getting married, I will say again, is a man-made law. It is not God's law.
And I have Michelle Dillon here, who is, this is her area of expertise. Michelle, you want to respond?
Ellen's point, all of them very good, but the notion of, you know, of infallibility, and sometimes we forget because it's not that well publicized, but, you know, the Pope only invokes infallibility in very specific and very, you know, clear circumstances. And in fact, the Church's own canon law, which is a man-made also creation, emphasizes the collegiality of Catholic teaching. And so, yes, the Pope is the head of the Church, but he's supposed to be in consultation, in collegial dialogue with his fellow bishops and, as we know, with the people of God, the larger Catholic faithful. So I think as we move forward and anticipate, you know, the next pope, I think it would be fantastic to see him bring some of this collegiality back to decision-making. I think that'll go a long way with ordinary Catholics if they feel that their voices have some relevance in the Church's deliberations.
I agree with you. I think they should be asking people who are part of the faith, what do you think about this and what do you think about that?
And that's totally in line with canon law. So nothing radical there. It's totally Catholic.
Thank you so much, Ellen, for the call.
Thank you.
Well, that goes along with what Joseph wrote to our Facebook page. He said, perhaps someone more interested in looking to the future of the Church rather than preserving and returning to its past could be chosen from amongst the many, many cardinals jockeying for political advantage in the selection process. So Joseph is hoping for an opening there, even though we got a call from Hank who lost his line, but he wanted to let us know that he admired this pope's humility to know his limits, and he thought he was a great pope because he did do so.
Right. Well, I think this was a very selfless act to step down.
Walter, did you want to say something?
Well, I was struck that I think in terms of everybody's hopes, maybe not everybody's hopes, that the Church would become more open and transparent. I think the fact that, I think it was about 2 months ago, the Pope started his Twitter account, but he didn't, like everybody else, make today's announcement on Twitter. He did it in a statement in Latin, which, you know, given that, and obviously given the conservative nature of the College of Cardinals, I don't know, and I don't expect that there would be much change that at least would make American Catholics happy, certainly American women Catholics.
But Walter, he could, whoever the next pope is, can convene a synod of the world's bishops. He can convene another Vatican Council. There are many avenues within the Church, many mechanisms within the Church available to the pope to bring the cardinals and others, not just the, you know, the ordained, together to discuss some of the core issues.
But it would take, would it not, a pope who is not cut from the same mold as his predecessor
but I think all of these cardinals, as I was saying earlier, they're all independent men, you know, that yes, they can be very faithful to the current pope, but they nonetheless have their own views on various issues. And as you know, John the 23rd surely must be a role model. Everybody assumed that he was going to be a caretaker pope, you know, do no harm. And he came in and convened Vatican II. So I think that has to give people optimism. The change is always possible in the Catholic Church, and that's why it has still, you know, been resilient enough, is because it has accommodated itself to lots of different changes over time.
If you don't mind my asking, do you see any prospect, given the age and infirmity of the last two popes, that the College of Cardinals might in fact choose somebody quite a bit younger?
Well, you seem to be earlier waving a flag for Cardinal Dolan, and I'm sure he'd be delighted to step up.
No, it wasn't me.
Oh,
no, I mentioned him because his name had come up on a short list. You mentioned the young guy from Brazil who's 65.
All right.
So I have to say that this is going to be the speculation that I will have later on this show because I'll enjoy it later when we have more real names.
But the concern, if you have too young a person, you know, it's like putting a young justice on the Supreme Court that could be there, you know, for 40 years and they might do, you know, from depending on the different cardinals' perspectives, too much damage in their assessment. So it's a tough call.
We'll see what happens. And I thank you both for coming to talk to me about Pope Benedict with and his resignation, his decision to step down because of infirmity. I've been speaking with Michelle Dillon, a professor of sociology and the department chair at the University of New Hampshire, and Walter Robinson, distinguished professor of journalism at Northeastern University. He oversaw the Globe Spotlight team that broke the sex abuse scandals in the Catholic Archdiocese of Boston. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you, Kelly.
Coming up, I'll be talking with Nick Collins, the latest candidate to run in the special election for First District.